It's housed parallel bars, pianos, paintings, books, and artifacts. Every summer, thousands of tourists have their picture taken beside the giant brown bear just inside the entrance, and it's taken the current occupants more than 15 years to move out. It's not a circus big top, but it is the only museum Fairbanks has, the University of Alaska Museum. Curators are currently packing up collections and moving them to the new facility, which will be open to the public in spring of 1980. Lou Rowinsky has been director of the museum since 1964, the year that a move to new quarters was first proposed. Why build a new museum?
The present museum, the building that is, has been standing for quite a while on campus since about 35, and it's never had very much done to it. It's had successive occupants. Libraries was on the upper floor. The music department was there. The art department was there. The lower part was a gymnasium for many years. And we took it over in the early 60s. We were told at that time it was temporary quarters because we were hoping to find new quarters for the museum. We expanded into all of that space and then moved into other spaces on campus too and filled those all up. And none of them were designed for a museum. What we were looking for was adequate quarters that would provide safe, secure kind of housing for the materials we have in the collections and make them accessible through exhibits and through study for people by having everything a little more easy to get at.
What kinds of facilities will the new museum have that the old one didn't?
In general, the whole situation for the collections and for the public will be much better. The new museum is going to have an environmental system, for example, that provides good conditions for holding specimens. We'll be able to regulate the temperature. We'll be able to regulate the humidity. There'll be dust control. It'll provide a much easier viewing situation for the public. There'll be open areas to from which you can see materials. There'll be wider aisles. The materials will be housed in new cases. It'll be much more comfortable.
You're mentioning that in the new museum, there will be temperature and humidity controls. The implication is that in the present museum or the old museum, there were no temperature and humidity controls per se.
There are no controls. We had a phenomenal variance in temperature and humidity, not only from season to season, but from hour to hour.
Room to room.
From room to room.
Given that situation, has there been much damage to the collections?
Yes. There's been lots of deterioration of materials. It's not good for lots of objects, particularly ethnographic things that are made out of skin or wood, ivory, or other organic things, to have continual temperature changes, to have the kind of exposure to light that they sometimes have had in this building, to be as dry as they have been. Lots of people notice our large boats. We have some very fine kayaks, umiak, and bark canoes, and they are all splitting just because it's so dry in that building.
Given that there is no Fairbanks North Star Borough Museum, do you see this museum as more than just a university museum, as a community museum as well?
Oh, yes. We perform lots of functions that a university museum often wouldn't be called on to do, simply because we are located in the community without other kinds of museum facilities to speak of. We have school tours. We bring classes out. The general public comes to our museum much more heavily than it would normally come to a university museum. All of the tour companies in Fairbanks on their city tour during the summer stop to visit us.
And so kids.
I think we're a major public kind of facility, as well as being one that's associated with the university and have all the university functions that a museum has to have.
Given that you do interact with the community so much, is there any community funding for the museum?
Not at the present time. The museum is supported by the state as part of the state university, and the funding for the building came as a direct appropriation from the state legislature. There have been generous donations from individuals within the community. There's been support from businesses and corporations in the community, but there is no regular kind of support from the community.
In the new museum, will any of the kind of famous and heretofore hidden pieces in the collection be on exhibit?
Yes. One of the most famous things we have that most people probably don't know very much about is the Oakvik Madonna, which is a small carved ivory figure that came from Punuk Islands, and it was found by Otto Geist in the early 1930s. It's been illustrated in almost every book on Eskimo art and early Alaskan prehistory. People are very familiar with it. Visitors from all over the world come, archaeologists come, and they all want to see this particular piece, but we've never been able to keep it on exhibit, partly because of the security situation, partly because we didn't like the conditions we'd have to put it in the exhibit area. So it will be on exhibit.
The other piece I think that a lot of the members of the public are familiar with that the museum owns and would like to see, perhaps a different segment of the public, is the two-headed caribou. Will that be on a display as
well? No, it won't be on an exhibit. It's really a scientific kind of specimen. It's just an example of an aberrant biological instance. And what we're trying to do in the new building is give as broad and complete and accurate a picture of Alaska as we can. The two-headed caribou is just a freak, and we're not trying to run a sideshow.
Okay, how about the big brown bear?
The big brown bear is representative of a very interesting kind of animal. People like him because he's big and exciting, but he is a typical example of that very important species in Alaska, and he will have a very prominent place there.
So tourists needn't fear. The brown bear will retain its prominent position, and photos may still be taken with the hairy beast, though the star position will have to be shared with previously undisplayed treasures of less size, but probably greater importance. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Governor Jay Hammond has said that no drug law would be too harsh for him to sign. He's certainly no subscriber to the furry freak brothers' maxim,
"Dope will get you through times of no money better than money will get you through times of no dope."
There are three bills currently proposed to consolidate and revise Alaska's drug laws: Senate Bill 65, a bill submitted by the House Judiciary Committee, and a bill drafted by Commissioner of Public Safety William Nix and Dan Hickey, Chief Prosecutor for the State of Alaska. Their bill, supported by Attorney General Avram Gross, is patterned after the Federal Controlled Substances Act of 1970 and the Uniform Substances Act. Both the federal and uniform acts have served as models for 44 states that have recently revised their drug laws. The purpose of Nix and Hickey's bill is both to ensure proper regulation of legitimate handling of controlled substances, such as pharmaceutical use, as well as to discourage traffic and use of drugs by providing penalties for use and possession. The proposed bill classifies all drugs into schedules based, ostensibly, on the relative danger of the substance. Six schedules are used, as in the federal and uniform acts, with heroin included in Schedule 1 and liquor and marijuana in Schedule 6. However, the proposed bill establishes a Controlled Substances Committee, which is responsible for adding, deleting, and rescheduling controlled substances as information becomes available concerning drug abuse. Chief Prosecutor for the state, Dan Hickey, co-author of the bill, was queried about the necessity for new drug legislation.
The existing drug laws are a mess. They're inconsistent. They contain numerous loopholes. For example, there's lots of defenses under those laws that make no sense. For example, on cocaine, if we're talking about synthetic cocaine, there's a thing that we as prosecutors refer to as the cocaine isomer defense, and it's simply the chemical formula varies between the two, and in terms of how the law presently defines cocaine, one's illegal and the other isn't. Same thing with marijuana. There's a thing called the species defense. The present law only technically prohibits one species of marijuana. So we get into arguments in court about whether or not we got the right species. You're all familiar with the greenhouse problem. The pound provision is designed to speak specifically to that. There are problems throughout the marijuana provision. Simply the fact that 20% of all of our non-traffic prosecutions approximately are drug cases. And the fact that the criminal code left them alone with the revision seems to me to be evidence in and of itself that we need to do something about the drug laws. All right, so that I think takes care of why we need a bill. I think this is a good bill and the kind of bill we need, because it's clear, it's well organized, it ties into the criminal code. The scheduling of drugs in the bill is rational. The penalty scheme is rational. And it adequately takes care of the legitimate handler question, which really isn't done so under present law. Those are the reasons I think that this is a good bill.
William Nix, Commissioner of Public Safety, concurs with Prosecutor Hickey.
You know, I agree with Dan 100% on that. You know, we have spent a lot of time talking about the differences in the bills, the needs. And one reason, you know, the governor has brought it up so early, which is unusual when you talk about drug legislation, is to get a lot of public input. You know, we'll go any place in the state where there's a group of people that's concerned about the drug issue that want us to talk to them. And we've got, you know, several months to accomplish that.
Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.